no sound is heard from Munich too, where there was once so much to do. It was once a green mansion, and now it's a wasteland. Our days of reckless fun are through.
Hey guys, it's episode 611 of All Time Top 10. ATTT is delighted to welcome a new voice to the pod. Someone who, yes, you guessed it, we plucked from the gang of thieves and rascals that we find on Tuesday nights over at Cantor's Kibitz Room. Our good friend Severo is on this week to talk punk, more specifically LA punk. Throughout the decades, LA and punk have gone together beautifully. The scene is full of original voices and sounds, probably more eclectic than you realize. Part one of the top 10 LA punk bands is up next with the great Severo. Or is it Severo the Great? Find out next. Anyway, thank you to all of our favorite people, aka the Patreon people. People like Joe Lavelle, for instance. Thanks for joining, Joe. That's right, ATTT's Patreon is back in full effect. This time in emergency pod mode. Every month you'll get a bonus episode utilizing our patented emergency pod format with an improvised playlist that we pull out of thin air. April's episode features the incendiary David Daskal with a truly eclectic playlist. How do Mariah Carey and Rainbow end up in the same playlist? Find out how and get new Patreon emergency pod episodes every month for $5 a month. That's at patreon.com/alltimetop10. All right, also while you're at it, check out our new Facebook chat group where we're having all sorts of fun talking about and sharing our favorite music. Join us and start a conversation, won't you? Also there on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads, we're doing polls letting you choose the bonus track of the week and helping reveal three more songs in the ongoing mega project, our list of the 1,000 greatest songs we've ever heard, aka the ATTT 1000. This week it was number 634, Roberta Flack, The First Time Ever I Saw Your Face. I was asking you guys, what's your favorite romantic slow jam of the 70s? Lots of great picks here. Me and Mrs. Jones, Let's Stay Together, Always and Forever by Heatwave, You're the Best Thing That Ever Happened to Me by Gladys Knight, Teddy Pendergrass, Come Go With Me, Barry White, Can't Get Enough of Your Love, Baby, Misty Blue by Dorothy Moore, Bill Withers, Ain't No Sunshine, Free by Denise Williams, Wishing on a Star by Rose Royce, and many more. We love The First Time Ever I Saw Your Face by Roberta Flack, and I think you guys do too. Lots of great comments here. Thank you so much. Our friend Dan says, this is the best love song ever recorded. It's perfection. Ryan says, I picked it as one of my top five love songs when I did a podcast on the topic some years back. A nearly impossible task, and of course my list would change daily, but it's definitely perfect. David Daskal says, awesome that it made your top. And Tony Koch says, oh yes, we can never forget. That's Roberta Flack, everybody. At number 633, it is The Carpenters, We've Only Just Begun. I was asking you guys, what's your favorite guilty pleasure of the 70s? Yes, we get it. Some people think there's no such thing as a guilty pleasure. Those people are annoying. But you guys had some good suggestions otherwise. We had I Am I Said or Holly Holy from Neil Diamond, Mandy by Barry Manilow, The Last Farewell by Roger Whittaker, Midnight at the Oasis, Summer Breeze, Kiss with Beth, Afternoon Delight, I Go to Rio, Bread with Baby I'ma Want You, Shannon by Henry Gross, Disco Duck, Leif Garrett, I Was Made for Dancing, and many more. But We've Only Just Begun just kills me. It's so good. Thank you to our friend Jet, who says, if you'll allow me to fanboy for a moment, for the record, the Carpenters are never a guilty pleasure in my book. That duo is arguably more talented than the other two acts combined. Richard's arrangements and Karen's drums and that voice. That voice alone is legendary. She perhaps is the best female voice of the decade, possibly the following decade as well. Thank you, Jet. Yeah, that's We've Only Just Begun. And at number 632, it's Aretha Franklin, I Say a Little Prayer for You. We were talking about Bacharach David, Burt Bacharach and Hal David, that is. I was asking you guys, what's their best song and best version? And lots of good suggestions here. Isaac Hayes or The Stranglers doing Walk On By. Dionne Warwick, I'll Never Fall In Love Again. Do You Know The Way To San Jose also. The After The Fox theme song, Make It Easy On Yourself by the Walker Brothers. What The World Needs Now. Always Something There To Remind Me by Naked Eyes. Little Red Book by Love. BJ Thomas, Raindrops Keep Falling On My Head. A House Is Not A Home by Luther Vandross. Dusty Springfield, The Look of Love, and In the Land of Make-Believe. Anyone Who Had a Heart, and This Guy's in Love with You by Herb Alpert. But we love I Say a Little Prayer for You by Aretha. Our friend Shirley says, this one I sing to my husband quite a bit. Eric says, another example of Aretha beating the original, and Dionne Warwick's version is fantastic. Ashley says, and several Muscle Shoals Swampers as part of her studio band. You can't discount the Swampers. Thank you for that. And yeah, I Say a Little Prayer, so good. Those songs are now added to the ATTT 1000 playlist, now complete with Neil Young and Joni Mitchell. Thank you for coming back to Spotify, you guys. So those are at Spotify and also on YouTube. So check it out, everyone. Look for the ATTT 1000 playlist at those places. Anyway, let's talk to our friend Severo. Let's talk LA punk and, you know, roll the tape.
Stage and those kids are gonna be screaming for more.
Yeah, Potato Head's right. I can hear him now.
Ow! Trasher, it's the cops, the ones that were after you.
We better stash that base. They'll be looking for it.
They want this lousy guitar? They can have it.
Top 10 LA Punk Bands, Part 1.
What happened? What kind of effects are you putting on me? You putting on the radio voice effect? I would like the Edward R. Murrow app, please.
Oh.
If you don't have that, you have to download
it. I got all I got is Wolfman Jack.
You know what? Yeah, hey, that works really well.
You're going to keep that on the whole time? I can turn it off.
No, it's fine.
Anyway, and it's pronounced Severo, right?
Severo, right. Not Severo.
Yeah, I did that for a little bit.
Severo. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's gotten to the point of whatever, you know, at least they know what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
They know the name.
And I don't need to say Hornacion unless you want me to.
You can say Hornacion. You know, you could say my full name, which is Severo Concepcion Hornacion Jr.
Whoa.
Yeah. But by the time you say that, that's the end of the podcast.
All right. We'll just stick with Severo.
Okay. due to time constraints.
Yeah.
We use my
brevity
first name
is
only.
The soul of wit. Deuter, if you're into the whole brevity thing.
Yes.
All right. Here we go. Hey, everybody. Ta-da. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another mandatory episode of all time, top 10, yeah. Gotta get them laughing. Listen to that crowd. Oh my God. People, I beseech you. It's kind of getting creepy. You know, when you cheer for 3 seconds, it's great. When it's like 8 seconds, then...
Well, my breath only goes so far.
Appreciate it. Anyway, welcome to the show, everybody. Welcome to All Time Top 10. I'm your host, Ben Eisen, and with me here today in Good List Studios on this wonderful Saturday evening in Silver Lake, California.
The last Saturday
before daylight savings time.
That is correct.
Yeah, you're dating us now. People will be hearing this a month from now or whatever, but that's cool. Yeah, it is March 9th. I can't wait for this. Yeah, I'm so ready for it. I'm ready for...
Well, we got 4 hours, so it's going to be here quicker than you can think.
Anyway, joining us today on this wonderful evening is someone that I met at the Kibitz, of course. The Kibitz Room gang has infiltrated my show once again. I just got such a warm feeling from meeting this person, and I met him on stage, and I was playing some bass on something, and Mr. Severo, I did it again. Severo. I was going to say Hernacio, but now we don't need to do that.
Well, you just said it.
So. Damn it. Severo is here, though. Yeah. You're worthy of there they go again. You're worthy of one. What's the phrase for you? Just one word. That's your name.
Yes, like you know, Madonna or Prince or.
I mean, we got the big ones. We got Madonna. We got Bono. We got Prince. We got Sting, and we got Severo. That's it. That's Mount Rushmore plus one.
That's you know. That's all you need. That's all you need to know.
That's right. And I did meet you on stage at Cantor's Kibitz
Room.
Yes,
you did.
And since then, I think I was introduced to you by a friend, Fusby Morse.
Yes, Mr. Fusby Morse is a dear mutual friend of ours.
He's a fantastic human. I love that guy. Got to talking and was just, you know, I've been going there, trying to get there more often these days. And you're always there. I mean, not always, but, you know.
A good amount.
A good amount. And you're a fixture there, and you kill it on the guitar, and you kill it on the bass. And when you're not there,
it falls apart.
It does fall apart. You're the glue. You and Jason Burke and Dan, of course, you guys are the glue. When you're not regaling us with... funny anecdotes and melting our faces off on the guitar over there. What are you up to? Because you do all kinds of fun stuff for a career and for just for fun. I hope you would think it's fun.
Well, my career is fun.
Yeah, that's the whole point. Right?
So that is the point. You get to the point where you go, I'm going to have fun, and I'm able to have fun.
That's why we do this show too. Tell everyone you're usually on tour with a little band.
Yes,
you may have heard of.
I'm the bass player in a band called The Smithereens, which was a big band in the 1980s, and we're still touring.
Power pop, baby.
And, yes, we are a power pop band, more of a harder power pop band than most of you would realize, but.
Yeah,
still,
you guys, it's hard rock.
Of course it is.
But it's pop too.
Very pop.
Yeah. And I saw recently you posted a photo of you guys playing at the Ryman in Nashville. Unbelievable.
The unbelievable church of the Ryman Auditorium in Nashville, Tennessee. Yes.
I mean, you won at life in that moment. That's it.
It was a very wonderful experience, and if you could see my mouth, it was open for about 5 minutes as I looked around the stained glass windows lining the auditorium.
Yeah, for those who don't know, the Ryman in Nashville is where they used to record the Grand Ole Opry, and it's from its like inception all the way to like this 1970s or 1980s maybe when they moved into their new shopping mall place, which is fine too. We saw Steve Martin there. It was really fun. We saw the Opry there, but the Ryman is like a cathedral. It's
Ryman is a legendary place, much like the Carnegie Hall in New York City.
Hollywood Bowl.
Hollywood
Bowl. It's on that level.
Yes, it is. It's like a place that you would aspire to play in and just soak in all the wonderful legends that have played there.
Yep. So you were there with the Smithereens. Shout out to my friend Steve Cunningham, who took a photo. He's like, hey, the Smithereens are at the Ryman. Check it out. And I was like, I know that guy.
Thank you, Steve, for attending.
Yeah, he said you guys were killer. So you guys are on tour in 2024?
Yes, we have a few shows coming up. We got a little bit of a break now, and then we'll be going full tilt maybe at the beginning of May.
So you won't be at the Kibitz, because you'll be on the road.
That's another thing. I won't be at the Kibitz at the beginning of May.
Yeah.
But I might be, but it just depends.
He's going to wing in for one Tuesday night. No, don't do that.
Yeah, well, I will be there at certain times, and then I won't be there at certain times. So there you go.
Okay, everyone got that? Y'all got that? If you go to the Kibitz, you may not see Severo there.
There's a 50-50 chance that you might see me. Let's put it that way.
Do you have anything else going on? I mean, I know you're playing like cover bands and whatnot.
I that's what I do.
I dabble.
I just pretty much play music all the time now.
Yeah.
So it's been a wonderful thing to happen in my life, and I'm very appreciative of it. And I'm always looking to do more things, but I'm in a good place.
Great.
Right now.
Fantastic. So people want to keep up with what you're up to. Do you have a website, or do you have Instagram?
I have a Facebook page that I usually post stuff on, and it's under my name, Severo, S-E-V-E-R-O.
Yes.
And you could certainly find me there.
Yes. I will post the link to that, everyone, if you want to join in. Keep up the great work, man, and thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a treat to be here, and I'm looking forward to doing this because I am losing my podcast virginity.
Is that true?
Yes. Tonight is a very cherry-popping moment.
All right. Wow. I'm honored. That's amazing.
Yes.
That's so cool. Okay, so I originally was pitching this to do a show with you about power pop because you play with the Smithereens, and you know that's kind of that band's bread and butter. But we were exploring other ideas, and you kept coming back to Madame Wong's, and it's in Hollywood, right? It was
in actually China. There were two locations. The original one was in Chinatown, and then the second location was in Santa Monica, California. And it was housed in a former funeral home.
Hmm. Is that the one where all the punk bands came through?
No, it was mostly
the one in
Chinatown.
Yeah.
Right. And that was when in the late 70s. And there was another club maybe about 200 feet from Madame Wong's called the Hong Kong Cafe, which was more of a punk-oriented venue.
Cool. Yeah, you brought up Madame Wong's, and it got me thinking about LA punk, and how many great bands have been from here over the years, 70s, 80s, 90s, even today. There's great bands. The scene is, you know, I used to go to the Mr. T's Bowl Friday nights in the late 90s, early 2000s, when I first moved out here. I used to go to Alex's Bar a lot. Mm-hmm. And there were new bands, new punk bands that were awesome. It's just been a scene that's gone on forever. And there's so much cool history. And I thought it'd be fun to talk about. That's what we're going to talk about.
Yes. And LA punk was a definite sound compared to the other punk cities, such as New York and UK.
Totally.
But still, nonetheless, very formative and very influential to some of the bands you'll hear today.
Yep. Yeah. And I feel like hardcore originated here.
Yes.
Right?
Hardcore was the very beginnings.
Yep. And you might hear a little bit of that on this particular show. So let's do this. We want to talk about our favorite LA punk bands. And how this is going to work is I will start us off with number 10 because we're doing a top 10 list. I'll start us off with number 10. I'm going to pick a band and we're going to talk about them. And then I'll play a song and then we'll come back and you got number 9 and you pick another band, talk about them, play a song. And I got number 8 and so on and so forth. We'll get to number 1, which you will have number 1. So
I have number 1. I'm so excited.
Look at all those notes. Holy shit.
I came prepared.
Yeah, man. I'm excited about that. Handwritten, too. I hope there's enough lighting in here. We have a reading light. I'm going to have to set that up for you.
We're going to take a quick break while the tech sets up a reading light here. You know, so we have to call him in from Highland Park. He's such a...
Technical difficulties. We'll be right back. So since it is your first time on the show, I have to go first. And so, yeah, number 10 is up now, and it's mine.
Okay. I'm curious to hear your number 10.
All right. So LA has a lot of unique and fascinating neighborhoods and enclaves. With my band Data Maps, I've played a few times at a place called The Sardine in San Pedro. And I don't know if you've played there much, hung out there much.
I played there a couple of times, but that was a really great breeding ground for a lot of the punk movements in the early days.
Yeah.
So I think that's like almost like a giveaway because of the city.
Yeah. Well, you know, a band's coming up. There's one band that embodies Pedro. There was a lot of punk bands that came from there, but there's one that embodies what they call Pedro. And if you don't know the geography of this place, it's a tiny neighborhood. It's way to the south of LA, next to the port of Los Angeles. And most of the people that live there work at the port. It's like a very blue-collar town.
Yes, it was a fisherman's village there that a lot of Portuguese would... the fisheries.
Yeah, it's right on the out in the ocean there. Yeah. And the band, their greatest cultural export, in my opinion, is the band The Minutemen.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And if you don't know them, here's a bit from a website called thequietus.com, an econo history of The Minutemen. Was there ever a more paradoxical band than The Minutemen, comprising D. Boone, Mike Watt, and drummer George Hurley? Natives of working-class seaport San Pedro, card-carrying socialists, unpretentious to a fault, and forever jocular, the Minutemen were alt-rock's most blue-collar act, the union heavies of the 80s underground. Anomalous in the history of working-class American hardcore, however, they were also stupendously avant-garde. If you didn't know any better, it was the sound of an affectless dozen or so smacked-up jazz geniuses deconstructing Graham Parsons via John Coltrane. In a performance art space in no wave era Soho. But no, it was from three good old boys with big ambitions, audacious songs, and endless resources of energy. Our band could be your life, they believed, and for many it was. So.
Absolutely, and they were aptly named. For some of their songs were not even a minute. There was a few that were over a minute, but.
I know. I was just going to get to that because their 1984 double album, Double Nickels on the Dime, which is what they're most famous, there's 43 songs in 74 minutes. Of the 43 songs, only 9 of them are over 2 minutes long. Probably the best known of them is Corona, which is the theme from Jackass. Everyone knows
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But they put out 4 albums while on the legendary SST Records from 1981 to 1985. Sadly, the band ended when singer D. Boone died in a car accident. But they put out some brilliant stuff. There's no telling what they could have done if that hadn't happened. I'm going to play something from that album, Double Nickels on the Dime. This is a song called Vietnam. From the Minutemen. I was going to say thank you so much to our good friends on social media, Facebook, Twitter, and Threads for making picks. Thanks to our friends Missy and Anne. They say play something from the Minutemen. So check it out. Number 10.
Number 10, Minutemen.
in French Indochina.
There it is, man. Shout out to Mike Watt on the bass. Oh,
what a great line.
Which one, the lyric or the music?
Oh, both of them. Yeah. Both of them.
What was the thing about, here we are in French Indochina? Yeah. America's foreign policy for 10 long years, not one domino shall fall. Yeah. And yeah, the music is insane.
A lot of jazz elements, which makes it more punk, because jazz is punk in a sense.
Interesting.
Yes.
I never thought of that. Yeah. I see
it goes off in a lot of different directions, and that's the part, that's the punk part. It makes it.
Yeah, you're going to hear a lot of different styles in this episode, I think. And none were more different than the Minutemen. So that's number 10. Severo, what's number 9? What do you got?
Number 9. Well, let's see. I'm going to go with a band that was formed in the San Fernando Valley.
Mm, love the Valley. My first place I lived in L.A. was, what was it, Lancashire and Sherman Way.
Okay.
North Hollywood, the bad part of North Hollywood.
Now there's no bad part of North Hollywood, I know, I guess. Right?
That's what I've heard. It's much better now. Anyway.
So the number 9 band is a band that formed in 1977, and they were known for their covers, the real hyper covers.
Ooh, the Dickies.
Song covers. That is absolutely correct. The Dickies.
Yes, one of my alternates. Yes.
Formed in 1977. To me, they were more the West Coast version of the Ramones, because they had a great sense of melody and catchy songs.
Great sense of humor, too.
A great sense of humor. So they're more of like a pop punk band.
Yes.
They were palatable for both skinheads and skinny ties. That's the way I would describe them. They were,
like that.
They always had high energy live shows, and they used costumes and puppets.
Really? I've never even seen that.
And they had a roadie.
I've seen footage of them.
Yeah, they had a roadie who was a midget.
A little person, as they say. They called him a midget.
They had a roadie who was a smaller person.
It's okay.
I want to be correct on this stuff, because some of this punk that we are covering is not correct nowadays.
No, but a lot of the times, you know, they were swastikas or whatever. They were, you know, on purpose, in your face and irreverent and didn't give a fuck. Yeah,
right.
That's the ethos.
Exactly. They were the first LA punk band signed to a major label. Back in 1978 with A&M.
I didn't know that.
Yes, now you know that. And the driving force were two guys in the band that have been there forever. That is the guitar player Stan Lee. Not to be confused with the Marvel Stan Lee.
Rest in peace.
Yes, R.I.P. But it was the singer Leonard Graves Phillips, with his very high cartoonish voice, which lent an attitude and a real manicness to their songs.
Yes, you shouldn't listen to them before you go to bed, because you will be amped up.
If you need to wake up, perfect.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because you wake up feeling good, because their stuff is so much fun.
Yes, and a lot of their songs were covers, like I said. They do a crazy version of Paranoid by Black Sabbath. They do
The Banana Splits theme song.
The Banana Splits theme song.
Yeah.
They do Gigantor, the theme from Gigantor.
That's right.
And they do Nights in White Satin by the Moody Blues. So how can you not help but like this band who interpreted the songs in a very manic punk way?
And their own songs are great too. I was like bouncing around and cleaning this place. I was bouncing around to You Drive Me Ape, You Big Gorilla.
Yes,
the song's so fun.
Exactly. And then on the way here to Ben's place, I was driving up the street, and what did I see? A sign for the Pep Boys, Manny, Mo, and Jack.
Oh, did they write a song about them?
You haven't heard Manny, Mo, and Jack?
Oh, okay. No, I've heard the title. No, actually, I don't think I've heard the song.
It is a great song. It's one of my favorite songs.
Is that what we're going to hear?
Yes, I think we're going to hear that.
Nice.
Let me have I have another little thing about the guitar
he
players.
You really did a lot of research, everybody. Yeah.
There's another thing I want to say about guitarist Stan Lee. He has an interesting connection with Iggy Pop.
What's that?
Well, he traded some dope for Iggy Pop's leather jacket that was on the cover of Raw Power.
Oh, wow. Iggy must have been down and out, huh?
I have no idea what happened, but...
I read that Please Kill Me book, The Oral History of Punk, and he went through some bad times.
Right, so...
Strung out and all that.
Mm-hmm. So this was a little transaction that they did, and then Stan sold the jacket a few years later while he was strung out, so for a few $100. He said he wanted to keep it, but it was already falling apart. But I thought that was a very interesting anecdote to their history. And one of the bands that they influenced greatly was Green Day. And if you hear the Dickies, you'll hear how Green Day
sent totally. Know what? You're absolutely right. It's the Billy Joe sounds just like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He had that same kind of cartoonish attitude. Yeah. So,
can I also give a quick shout out to the theme song for Killer Clowns from Outer Space?
Oh, see that? That's there are classic. So many. That's the great thing about the Dickies. They were
fun.
They were fun. They were not real hardcore punk, but like I said, they had that same kind of drive and attitude.
Yep.
And you could hear it in a lot of the bands that are big today.
There you go. All right, we doing Manny, Mo, and Jack?
Manny, Mo, and Jack. And if you haven't heard this one, you'll love this one.
I'm
because
excited.
It's like when you hear the lyrics, I go, it's like, it's perfect.
All right, let's check it out. The Dickies coming in at number 9.
Number 9, The Dickies.
We'll be right back.
Everyone listen to that song all the way to the end when you get a chance. There's a big car crash. This is so good. Hold on. I gotta read this. When you're on the road and your car won't pull that load and your wheels aren't feeling fine. Well, I know of this joint where they'll check your plugs and points. I know these guys. They're three good friends of mine. Manny, Moe, and Jack. If you don't know Pep Boys, they have these...
Pep Boys is actually national. They started in Philadelphia.
Yeah? Oh, I thought that was like an LA thing.
They've been around since the 30s, I do believe. They started out in Philadelphia.
Okay, so everyone listening should know what those guys look like. They're like bobbleheads or something.
Right.
Yeah. They know what I'm after. Thank you for that. You got anything else? Because you have so many notes. This is crazy. You good? Because we can move on to number 8 otherwise.
I think I'm fine. I got pretty much what I wanted to say. You know.
Well, thank you for doing all that. Most people come in like, what are we talking about?
I want to research everything and so I could have a history of them because I want the listeners to hear.
That's the fun stuff.
That's how I wanted to impart my research and my knowledge to you so you could appreciate why there were such
that's right.
influential bands back in the late 70s.
Yep. Yeah, and still going today, I think. A lot of these bands are for some reason. We'll get to some more later about that. But number 8 is up next, and shout out to mentalfloss.com and their excellent article, 10 Facts About the Go-Go's That Can't Be Beat.
They got the beat.
In this article, they talk about how the Go-Go's formed after founding members Belinda Carlisle, Jane Wiedlin, Margo Alvaria, and Alyssa Bello traveled to San Francisco to see the Sex Pistols. That was the show that ended up being their last, you know, the last Sex Pistols show, and they were kind of phoning it in, and Johnny Rotten did that, you know, he was heckling the crowd and saying that famous line, "You ever get the feeling you've been cheated?" Gene Wiedlin recalled in this pivotal moment, she said, quote, "These guys are our heroes, and they kind of sucked." yet this disappointment made the idea of forming a band much less intimidating for her and her friends. And in 1978, the foursome decided to become an all-girl band like the Sex Pistols meets the Chantels. That was their idea. In the early years, they didn't know how to play their instruments. But over time, in a few lineup changes, they added Kathy Valentine, Charlotte Caffey, and Gina Schock, who became the classic lineup. They got tighter. They got a little more pop-oriented. But they were always a punk band in spirit, you know. Especially back in the days when they couldn't play their instruments. So here's a little quote from that article. This is a fact about the Go-Go's number 4. Okay. The Go-Go's first tour was a trial by fire. The Go-Go's reputation grew in Los Angeles thanks to their standing gig as the opening act at the legendary Whiskey a Go-Go. There they played before English bands like Madness and the Specials, who were so impressed that they invited the women on a UK tour in 1980. The Go-Go's first manager, Ginger Canzoneri, was so determined to secure this incredible gig that she sold her car and pawned her jewelry to pay for their flights to London. The band was elated to travel to the homeland of punk to perform. However, they soon realized it wasn't the dream they expected. Skinheads were turning up to the shows, and Nazi punks were not impressed by American chicks belting out their first single, We Got the Beat. They were catcalled, heckled, and spat upon. Gina Schock says, quote, "They hated our guts. Belinda would walk off stage completely covered in spit. I remember walking off stage a lot of the times and we'd all be crying. It was tough, but the band was tougher. Quote, we were determined. We were going to show those fuckers." Sorry, Mrs. Eisen. Kathy recalled in the Go-Go's, "Every night we'd get on stage and we'd be so belligerent in our playing, just being more of who we were." So their debut album went on to be number 1 on the Billboard Hot 100, the Billboard, the album chart.
Yes, and it was on a very influential independent label back then called IRS.
Right. They even toured with the Police. That was more stuff I read in that article. because IRS was owned by Miles Copeland, who is the brother of Stuart Copeland, who also Miles also managed the Police. So they toured a lot with the Police, playing stadiums and stuff.
Yes, that was a great pairing.
Yes, for sure. You're a big fan? I'm a fan.
Yes, I am a big fan.
Cool. Yeah. So we're going to hear the last song on that 1981 album, Beauty and the Beat. It's a song called Can't Stop the World from the Go-Go's. Friends David and Bill want to hear something from them. So check it out, number 8.
Number 8, the Go-Go's.
Go-Go's. Every time the Go-Go's come up, I always think about this, and this is a fact that still to this day never fails to blow my mind. They were the first, and still today, the only all-woman band who wrote their own songs and played their own instruments to have an album reach number one on the Billboard charts. Every song on Beauty and the Beat was written by and performed by the Go-Go's, and to this day the only one that has the writing and the performing credits all up to women, and it hit number one. Isn't that crazy?
It is. It's
it's shocking that it's still the case. Like, how can that be? You know?
Right. It's, well, they were not given much of a chance when they were breaking out, and
yep.
And that's what drove them, is that they were going to do what people said they couldn't.
And they did. Yeah.
And they just paved the way. They just pretty much broke the door down for other women groups to come out and play. And when you look at all the female groups that are out there now, you could pretty much trace them back to the Go-Go's.
Yep. And they're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They were inducted in 2021 and absolutely deserving. So they're great. That's the Go-Go's. Let's go to number 7. Severo, what do you got?
What have I got? Well,
what does he got?
In continuing the pop punk sensibilities of a band, I'm going to go, what number are we? 7?
7.
7. I'm going to go with Bad Religion.
Nice. Oh, you're picking all my alternates. I'm so happy. Yes, they're amazing. They're like, and they're still going. They were around in like the late 70s, isn't
they
that
started
right?
in 1979.
Amazing.
They were a band that formed, I think their first show was in Burbank, California. Hmm. And they were named Bad Religion because they wanted to piss people off. So there you go.
Yes, they did. And they did, and for sure.
Their writing was about typical injustices of the time.
Very political.
Very political. But they had some really great melodies, and they were also had great harmony vocals.
Yes, underrated.
Very underrated. Yeah. They were like I said, they were a pop punk band, and they appealed to the sensibilities of the punks and the skinny-tied people.
Yeah. And who could hate Bad Religion? They're just awesome. Their debut, I think it's an EP. Fuck Armageddon, This Is Hell. It was How Could Hell Be? Yes. The song was that. How Could Hell Be Any Worse?
That's right. That's what it was. Part of it. And
like that's making a statement right out of the box, right? Like, who is this? They're calling themselves Bad Religion. Wow, like they're pushing buttons.
Oh yes, and that's what you did when you were in a punk band. You raged against things. You called attention to yourself because that was the only way that people would listen to you. It was the kind of attitude that punk was, not worldwide. It was about being angry and going against the injustices of the world. Yeah. And for a lot of these bands that I've researched, they had that primal quality, yet they had a wonderful intellectuality about them in their lyrics and their writings.
Yep.
And the delivery was very extreme and primal, but you could not say that these bands didn't write songs that were very relatable to a lot of people, especially young disaffected youth back then. Yep. And that's, they were able to make a connection to these people. And
yeah, those guys were so smart. Greg Graffin, the lead singer, he's like got a PhD, you know.
Right, and he teaches at UCLA.
Yeah, I think is it history or?
I do believe so. And it's like
religious history or something. I forget what it is.
Right.
But he's done lectures and yeah.
And going off track a little bit, The Offspring, who were definitely influenced by Bad Religion.
Yes. On the same label too, Epitaph.
Yes, uh-huh.
Yeah.
I forgot the name of the singer.
Dexter Holland.
Dexter Holland.
Yeah, he's a...
Just got a degree, a bachelor's, some kind of degree from USC.
PhD.
PhD.
I read about it. We did a Rock Stars with Advanced Degrees episode. So he was featured on that. And he's like a molecular biologist? Is that what it is?
Something, some kind of a...
I have to look it up. We'll look it up. We'll make sure to get that right.
But and that, just going on that for a little bit of a tangent, that's how he got the catchphrase in Come Out and Play. Because he was in a laboratory and he had two beakers.
Got to keep them separated.
Of chemicals, yes. And the main thing is you got to keep them separated.
Ah.
So he said, I like that phrase. You got to keep them separated.
Yeah, it's a great little hook. That's such a catchy song.
And it's based on scientific principle.
Yep. Here it is. Let's see. Dexter Holland is... He's published a paper regarding microRNA and HIV genomes, and he was awarded his PhD in molecular biology in 2017. Yeah. Yeah. Crazy. Anyway.
Just to mention that the guitar player, Brett Gurewitz, is also the label owner of Epitaph.
That's right.
Which is another important indie label.
Yep. And they were the probably the most important. I mean, in the 90s especially. I mean, that those Offspring albums, those Rancid albums, the Bad Religion albums were selling, you know, they're going platinum, triple, three, four times platinum, five times platinum.
Yes.
Crazy. And, so I hope they did all right. It sounds like they made some good money, and hopefully they're able to finance someone, you know, developing good bands and stuff.
Well, that was part of the DIY ethic of the punk bands. They put out their stuff, and you didn't have to worry about the major labels. They just did it on their own.
Yeah, I feel like Epitaph was like the most sophisticated of them. And Anti is a subsidiary.
Right, and Anti has,
they do great stuff
has
too.
Tom Waits.
Yeah, Nick Cave.
All these great other bands have a helmet, Epitaph. They were just as important as SST.
Yep. Which we may talk more about later.
That's right.
Anyway, let's play a song from Bad Religion. What do you like?
How about 21st Century Digital Boy?
All right.
It is so relevant nowadays.
I know. It's scary.
It is. It's scary. It's
terrifying. How this is for like, what, 1992 or something?
Yeah, I don't know.
How
where
did
to
they
put
know
it.
This stuff was going to happen?
Well, but I don't know how they did it either, but when you listen to the lyrics, they're very prescient and they fit today.
Terrifying. Thanks to Nick, Thomas, and Chris, they say, play something from Bad Religion, and they are number 7.
Number 7. Bad Religion.
I'm a 21st century digital boy. I don't know how to live, but I got a lot of toys. My daddy's a lazy middle-class intellectual. My mommy's on Valium, so ineffectual. Ain't life a mystery?
There's a lot of families like that, ladies and gentlemen.
Yep, and there always have been, apparently. Yeah, that's from their album Against the Grain, 1990.
So that's a late song, but it's still relevant now.
Well, the 90s, they were on top, you know, Infected and all that stuff. 2000s, I saw them in 2003 or so at the Glass House in Pomona. Mm. Great show. Yeah. And all those harmonies were all there. Fantastic. Let us go to number 6. And really, the three bands that I have at this is my third, number 3, you know, whatever, but it's number 6 for us. I have what I think is like the embodiment of LA punk. I've got probably the best punk band in LA, and I've got my favorite. And number 3 or number 6 is going to be my favorite.
All righty.
Yeah. There are a lot of bands on the SST label, such as Husker Du from Minnesota, that have a legitimate case that their records should have had a bigger sound. Because most of the stuff produced that came out of SST was produced and engineered by a guy named Spot.
God rest his soul.
Yes. Glenn Michael Lockett passed away, sadly, last year. Him and Greg Ginn were partners. Greg Ginn from Black Flag. Is it Ginn or Ginn?
I don't know. I
from Black Flag? Is it Ginn?
I guess we'll have to look it up in the thesaurus.
Know this. Should know this. Anyway, Spot produced and engineered classic albums from Black Flag, The Meat Puppets, Husker Du, The Minutemen, The Misfits, Saccharine Trust, The Crucifix, sorry, Mrs. Eisen, and each recording is a masterpiece of lo-fi. That's what Spot does. Everything is, you know, it's so minimal, and some would say that's like a thin sound, but I think it works so well with my favorite punk band, The Descendants, especially in their early iterations from the 80s. What I just love that sound for them because it's like feeds into their charm. They're a charming band. To me, they were like the next iteration of the Buzzcocks. Power pop, but with, you know, amped up, caffeinated up, you know, everything they did, they were on caffeine, you know, like they were obsessed with it. They wrote songs about it. They also wrote hilarious songs about food and farting and like suburbia and parents and meathead jocks and empty headed rock stars. And of course, all kinds of amazing love songs. They wrote great love songs, like sincere, beautifully crafted pop love songs as a punk band, you know? So I just love their range. I just love their sound. They're funny. They have, there's so much going on in the Descendants world as far as like their, like the church of all, you know, they have like invented their own religion, you know, it's all like hilarious stuff. And they're great musicians. Bill Stevenson, the drummer, played in the Descendants and Black Flag at the same time. And toured with both at the same time.
Yes.
How did he do that?
I have no idea, but that's the thing about the punks in Los Angeles. They're very communal. Mm-hmm. They knew each other, and they would play on each other's projects. And it was a really nice thing to see because there's
a community, for sure.
A community.
Yeah.
And that's what made it great, is that it united a lot of people.
Yeah. And I think that the Descendants are underrated. I think that they wrote great songs, which is like the number one thing you should strive for, in my opinion. It's all about the songs. Our friends Nick and Missy agree they want to hear something from the Descendants. I'm going to play what might be the greatest anti-drug song of all time. It's a song called Bikeage. And it's from the Descendants, number 6.
Number 6, Descendants.
Relax your mind, relax your body too.
bass line. Yeah.
Very wicked. It's a very genius bass line. It's very melodic and still fitting with the song.
Yeah. It's Tony Lombardo, by the way, on the bass.
Okay. One thing about the Descendants is, here's a quote from guitar player Tom DeLonge of Blink-182. Mm. Everything about how I sing and play guitar came from this band. Mm-hmm. Blink is absolutely a product of the Descendants.
That's a good quote.
Yes, it is. And yeah, it's so that's true.
That's a huge band, or they were for a long time. Yeah. And yeah, they're so influential. Green Day, of course.
Of course.
Yeah. And they put out some good records in the 90s and in recent decades, too. I just don't dig the sound as much. I love that minimalist sound that they had in the 80s. There's just nothing like it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like they're playing in your living room.
Right, and that's the great thing about their earlier stuff. It was just, there's no planning, no concept of what punk was. They just said, we're going to do what we want to do, and yeah. It sounds good to us. And it's an amazing sound that came out of L.A.,
yep.
Especially.
Yeah. Big shout out to Spot once again. Rest in peace. So that's number six. And that means we're at the halfway point, Severo.
Wow.
And we're going to do the top half of our list. But I didn't tell you this. I probably should have told you. I don't know if you have anything going on over the next week or so. But part two is going to come out next week.
Okay.
So if it's okay with you, we're going to wait for a week to tape it. We're just going to hang out.
Okay.
All right.
So that's fine.
So everyone tune in to part two coming out next week. Thanks so much for listening. We're going to do one more thing before we go. It's the bonus track of the week for part one. The song selected by our friends on social media, Facebook, Threads, and Instagram. Check it out. Thanks everyone for listening, and we'll see you next week. Until next time, peace out. Say bye.
Bye.
Yeah, what he said.
As chosen by our listeners on social media, here's the bonus track of the week.
Hey, everybody. It's time for the listener pick bonus track of the week selected by our friends over there on the social medias being Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. All right. This has been Top 10 LA Punk Bands Part 1. Thank you so much to our good friend Severo. We love you, buddy. We'll be back next week, everyone, with part two, so be sure to tune in for that. One more thing, though. It's the bonus track of the week, the bonus band of the week. These are the bands you guys were voting on social media. We had The Adolescents. We had NoFX. We had The Circle Jerks. But the winner this week, it is Social Distortion, otherwise known as Social D to their friends. I believe they're from Orange County. Longtime stalwarts in the LA punk scene. Were a little more hardcore in the beginning. Developed sort of a rockabilly feel throughout. Mike Ness is their undisputed leader. And I really like their covers. I like the cover of Ring of Fire and other stuff. Everyone knows their anthem, Story of My Life. I don't know if they ever get sick of playing it, but they're the kind of band here in LA that are just revered. They would play someplace like the Wiltern, like a 1500 seat theater, and sell it out for 2 weeks straight. You know, they do stuff like that, and they're still kicking around as far as I know. Our friend Dave wants to hear something from Social D, so I'm going to play something from the 90s from them. This is one of their classics. It's called I Was Wrong. And it is the bonus track of the week, the bonus band of the week, Social Distortion. Check it out, everybody. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back next week with part two. And until next time, peace out.
Listener pick.